Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 4 of the Ball 5 podcast, the baseball podcast that just found out today that Weezer was going to do a tour with Slipknot at some point in the early 2000s, but they only nixed it, not because they thought it was a bad idea, but because Rivers Cuomo asked Slipknot if they could guarantee their fans safety, and Slipknot said no. My name is DJ Lopes, and I'm joined by Chris Lopes.
You're also burying the lead because they were going to call it the Sleezer Tour.
I mean, do you have better ideas?
Actually, no, I guess actually burying the lead would be... The lead is clearly Rivers asking Corey Taylor, you know, can you please make sure that Slipknot fans don't beat the shit out of Weezer fans? And him being like...
No, I cannot guarantee... To be quite honest with you, how man, much I can't guarantee that.
How much intersection do you think there is? Because to be completely blunt, I would be pretty decently psyched about seeing Slipknot and Weezer.
And I think that would be a cool show, too. But so I was thinking about it. And as far as concerts we've been to, I think that the biggest difference between the opener or like the two headliners was we went to a Deftones and Incubus concert. And they were like not the same genre, because Deftones is more nu metal and, you know, Incubus is more rock. But like they were same era. You probably... You know, if you had like a scrapbook where you would put all your favorite bands and stuff, you'd probably have a lot of kids in like the late 90s that had both of those bands in like their list. But they were still pretty stylistically opposed to each other. But this is just like that times 20. And it reminds me of, I forget what festival it was, but there was a set before a Playboi Carti set. I forget exactly who it was. But it was a set before a Playboi Carti set that was not like Playboi Carti. So there was a bunch of people that got up to the front for Playboi Carti, for like the person that was going before or after Playboi Carti. And then his set came on and they just absolutely got ransacked. And it was just one of those things where it was like, I mean, if you probably went on a tour with him and you asked him, can you guarantee my fan safety? He would probably say no.
It wasn't like that. I forget what it was. It was something where like the major fans of them would have been like 13-year-old girls type of thing.
Yeah, I was going to say like Miley Cyrus, but I forget. And I don't think that Miley Cyrus would even have like too different of a crowd, especially now. But that's enough. We've gone already way too long on this bit. We're a baseball podcast, not a Slipknot and Weezer podcast, as much as we may want to do that. It is the off season, so we could probably branch down that path eventually. But that, I guess, segues to our next point, which is that now the World Series is over. It is finally finished. The Houston Astros came out on top in 6. I wonder who said that about a week or so ago. I guess probably I can't. There were not too many mathematical options to say, so I guess Astros in 6 was... just me getting lucky, but I did also predict the Astros to win before.
Did I say the Phillies?
You did say the Phillies because you were going to go chaos.
I was okay. I was going chaos.
You at least had a good reasoning for it. And to be fair to you, at some points in the series, it did feel like that was going to happen. Yeah. I think after game 3, when Lance McCullers was tipping his pitches and Philly was just going crazy off of him, I think there was a real moment where a lot of people thought that there's enough devil magic within this Phillies team. They completely stole it from the Cardinals after they beat them in the wild card. That there's enough devil magic within this team that this Phillies team is going to win the World Series. But after that, I have it down in the notes that the Astros just kind of turned on God mode and took control. And they took control in like one of the craziest ways we've seen in World Series history, which was a no-hitter, a combined no-hitter between, I believe it was Christian Javier, Rafael Montero, Brian Abreu, and I think it was also included Hector Neris and Ryan Pressly. And that's just kind of part of why I felt that this Astros team was so different and so talented. It's because like last year when I was watching them in the playoffs in the World Series, that offense was unlike anything I had ever seen. It was so dominant 1 through 7. And even then, after you got past that, it was Martin Maldonado in a pitcher spot. So like you kind of expected that it wasn't going to be that good. But this year, the offense is still pretty good. They didn't perform as well as I think we all thought they were going to be this year. But then in turn, they had one of the greatest pitching staffs and bullpens in particular in the entire postseason. I mean, Ryan Pressly and Brian Abreu, the back end of that bullpen, pitched, I think, a grand total of like 20, 21 innings, and neither allowed a single run. It was, you know, dominance, the likes of which I hadn't seen out of a bullpen, and I don't think we may ever see out of one single bullpen unit over an entire playoff.
Yeah, I mean, they really showed, and it's something that, you know, a lot of people have talked about in the recent years of, like, what is, you know, the formula to winning a World Series. And I think that they had about as good of a formula as you can get. But I think really your biggest formula right now is relief pitching. And, you know, if you can get five guys coming out of the bullpen that are going to all hit 97 with movement and stuff like that, then you're going to, you know, you have a good chance to win, because you're asking them to throw a few innings here and there and just hope that your starter can get you within three runs in the five innings or so, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of the time their starters were doing enough. I mean, the only two losses they had was when Justin Verlander was Justin Verlander in the postseason. I mean, the World Series, rather. And then the start where Lance McCullers was tipping his pitches. Other than that, Framber Valdez, I think, only gave up two earned runs in both of his starts combined. Christian Javier, obviously, threw a no-hitter. And then both those pitchers bridged the gap to the bullpen very well. Even Justin Verlander, when, you know, push came to shove in Game 5, really, he had a kind of similar start to his Game 1 against the Yankees, but not as dominant. Where Game 1 against the Yankees, he was really shaky the first couple innings and then just completely turned it on, struck out 11 guys. This one, he still didn't really look like he had it. I believe he had 4 or 5 walks in the game, but still was able to put down a really gritty start. And, I mean, I think it is very cool for him that he was able to finally get his first win. I think, you know, above all else, the guys you're really happy for on that team are Dusty Baker, Trey Mancini. I think it's really cool that Christian Vasquez got to get another ring with that squad, and he got to even have some moments in the postseason where it was a very confusing trade deadline acquisitions, considering how they utilized them down the stretch, with Trey Mancini barely getting any play time and then Christian Vasquez also barely getting any play time. But Christian Vasquez caught the no-hitter, and then Trey Mancini, even though he went hitless almost until game six, still was able to come in, make the defensive play of their whole postseason. Well, I can't even say that because I'm pretty sure Chaz McCormick made his jumping catch in the next inning. So maybe not the best infield play of their whole postseason against that Kyle Schwarber liner. And then he finally got a hit in Game 6. But I think that it was just a really exciting World Series. Pretty much all the games were good, even when they were a little lopsided. They were really fun to watch. And I think that I'm actually a little surprised with how well this delivered, because I kind of thought that the gas would have just ran out for Philly and, you know, Houston may have really walked over them, but they gave up a good fight. And, you know, I've already said way too many nice things about the Philadelphia Phillies just in general, but, you know, you do got to hand it to them. They played very, very well this whole entire postseason and really is one of the more fun teams that we've been able to watch in a postseason run in a while.
Yeah, they went on quite the run. I think the happiest person I am, or the most happy for a person I am, I don't know how that phrasing is supposed to go, is for Dusty Baker. I think that one of the coolest things, because it's the most relatable thing for me, was they showed him during the final out of the World Series, and he made sure to finish his scorebook before he celebrated with the rest of his team. And that just resonated with me. I feel like I've been in that scenario before where I've let out like a yes and then like finished my book while everyone else is jumping and I'm sitting there like walking back, you know, and like making sure that I get there.
It always reminded me. I mean, it reminded me of when they show like the Mets play of the game from the booth, Gary, Keith and Ron, and Gary's going crazy. He's throwing his pen. He's calling the game emphatically. And then Keith and Ron are just like elbowing each other saying like, oh, that was a good play. And then they're just like silently scoring their books. But yeah, I mean, it was really exciting. And I've been kind of thinking about this for a little bit. I texted this to you and then you never replied, which I was upset with because I felt like this was a very good point. It made me sound really smart. I think that the Astros are kind of like baseball's ship of Theseus. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I got a college degree.
Hell did you text this to me?
I texted this to you a while, like a couple weeks ago, and you just never responded to it.
I remember this.
I said that I think that the Astros are baseball's ship of Theseus, and that the obvious thing of the ship of Theseus was that you keep replacing parts to the same ship. At what point does it become a different ship? We're starting to get to the point, and I know it's tough when like Jim Crane is still the owner of the team and Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve are still two of the top four batters in the lineup, as well as, you know, Yuli Gurriel. I know it's still tough when those guys are still on the team, holdovers from the 2017 team, but we've gotten to the point where there are so many new guys on that team that you can be happy for. Jeremy Peña, I don't even think was on the Astros in 2017 or in the organization at all. I think he might have just been starting out in Maine. Yordan Alvarez wasn't there. Kyle Tucker wasn't there. There was just a lot of these people that are impact performers on the team. And this is in no way to, you know, excuse what was going on with the Astros. It was obviously bad, and you have every right to be upset at the uniform and the franchise for how they handled it. But it's kind of, you know, funny to me when you see people like booing, or, you know, I went to school in New York and I remember a lot of people were trying to go to Yankees games against the Astros to boo them. And I was like, you know, Kyle Tucker plays left field, right? You know, like he wasn't on the team that you're that upset with. So I kind of wonder where we're going to be in terms of hating the Astros, because now we have a genuine reason in that they're the just at this point, the returning champs. So they're kind of annoying in that they always go to the ALCS and they go to the World Series a lot. But I kind of wonder now that everybody can have this reason of, okay, it's not just because they cheated. Now they have another ring on top of that we can be upset about them for.
Yeah, it almost makes you wonder when they're going to get to that Yankees level, if they're going to get to that Yankees level. Just the hate them because they've been there, you know. I almost feel like it's kind of like, I was going to say it's kind of like a Golden State Warriors situation with them, I think. But I actually don't think that's true.
If they signed Aaron Judge this offseason, it would be.
Yeah.
Which segues to the next part of the show, and the part that we're actually going to be doing a lot of. Today, so the day we're recording this is Wednesday, November 9th. Hopefully I get this up tomorrow, Thursday. If I upload this on Friday, I'm going to sound so dumb now. But the November 10th is the start of free agency. So now we can see if some of these teams have been colluding. Although it doesn't really get like NBA free agency and MLB free agency. I feel like it's a lot more of a slow drip in MLB free agency. So hopefully this doesn't age like milk, all of these predictions immediately. But before we get to our predictions for the top 10 free agents and where they're going to go, I wanted to hit on a free agent that might have ended up on this list, but he signed before free agency even started, and that is Edwin Diaz. He signed a 5-year, I believe it was $102 million deal, with an option for a 6th year with the New York Mets to re-sign. And this is obviously something that we're more connected to because we are Mets fans. But it's just, I've been thinking a lot about it, a lot about the deal in general, and just like Edwin Diaz in general. And it's just, it's crazy the journey that he's been on as a New York Met. Traded for Jared Kelenic, you know, among a whole other slew of prospects and players. I believe Anthony Swarzak was in that trade alongside like Justin Dunn, but besides the point. In the trade for Jared Kelenic along with Robinson Cano, and then he comes out and he was terrible in the 2019 season, blew a lot of saves, gave up a lot of home runs, really was just kind of a victim of the juice ball. And became one of the most hated people in New York, you know, one of the most hated people in New York City. And then 2020 comes around, he's good, pretty good, but the Mets aren't good. So, you know, there wasn't really like any moment of vindictiveness for him. 2021 comes around, he was pretty solid just in general. He had a bit more of a bloated ERA because of some blow-up appearances, like when he gave up a walk-off grand slam to Jacob Stallings and the Pirates. That one's burned into my memory because I remember that is like an expected batting average of 0.87, and he hit the ball like essentially off of his wrist and it went out. So it was like kind of a bit of an up and down year. Just again, not one of those years that's going to make you completely change your tone on Edwin, even though he was pretty solid. And then 2022 comes around and he just becomes the most dominant reliever, one of the most dominant relief seasons we've seen of all time. And I think that while, yes, it's a lot of money to put into a guy that's going to pitch 60, 65 innings a year, especially with the way they were deploying him when the game started to matter and bringing him in for the higher leverage situations when you really need a reliever and just saying you'll figure it out later and we're going to pitch him for the eighth, maybe even the ninth. I think what he showed by being able to go six out sometimes and pitch 3 days in a row sometimes really enabled them to make this decision and make it a little bit more easier to say that, you know, we're going to throw as much money as we can and make you the highest paid reliever in MLB history.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me wonder. So just on, you know, Diaz in general, I think, you know, it's something that we've always talked about where the thing with Diaz and the years that he was struggling is that you could clearly tell, I believe like 2020 and 21 were really like this, where you could tell the second he threw his first pitch what type of inning you were going to get from Edwin. You were either going to get lights out, just strike out the side type stuff, or you were going to get this ball's going to go over the fence about five times this inning type of stuff. And you, like I said, you could clearly see because it was just this lack of command. I don't believe I remember seeing that at all this year, except for, I think, like a few games towards the end of the season. And that's just, you know, he was just so good for so long that it's not the easiest thing to do in the world, you know? So it's just... The level of dominance that he showcased, and he's still very young, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I know that relief pitchers, especially ones that have kind of that power pitching mentality, don't necessarily have the longest longevity. But I really do think that he is a little different in this. I think that he's just so dominant. And I don't think that he's, you know, going to be missing. And I really think that you paid this much. I think there's a few reasons why you give this if you're Steve Cohen to Edwin. I think, first of all, you're rewarding him for this last season. But I think you're also front loading this deal metaphorically. I don't think with the money they're doing it, but I think metaphorically you're hoping that we can win a World Series and Edwin will be a main piece of that World Series in the next 2 years or so. And if that happens, then sure, this is worth it. And if he's as big of a deal, this is totally worth it. I also think that, and maybe this will go into some predictions later on, but I almost think you're showing Jacob deGrom and Brandon Nimmo that you're willing to do the work to keep the people that you want to keep here, you know? And I think you're almost showing them, this is kind of that show me move of like, look, we'll give this to Edwin. The money's on the table for you. Do whatever the hell you want, but just know that we're here, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's too much of a hopeful New York Mets fan thing, but I'm wondering. I almost feel like that's part of the reason why he got signed as immediately as you could get signed, you know?
Yeah, and I think that it also goes to show how much that he came around in New York as well, just him personally, because, like you said, he didn't even want to give anybody the option to make him the highest paid coach. Now, granted, I don't think that there's any team that was going to spend $102 million on a reliever, so I think that regardless, even if he let that hit free agency, he was not going to get that deal on the open market. And that's something that's different with maybe Brandon Nimmo and Jacob deGrom in that there might be more of a competitive bidding war. But also, I think, like you said, you are showing that, you know, we're going to do, to the best of his ability financially, we're going to do right by our guys. And I think that that's going to be something that you kind of foster that relationship, that they can go out there for the first 5 days of free agency, gather all the offers they can get, and then turn back to Steve Cohen, almost like how restricted free agency works in basketball. You get all these offer sheets, and then you essentially turn them back to the team and say, hey, this is the money I'm getting elsewhere. I'm going to sign this. It's on you at this point to match it or give me more. But I think that'll do it on our Edwin Diaz talk. Once again, really cool. Every podcast that's going to be talking about this deal has said it, but the real winner is Timmy Trumpet. He does not get to fade into obscurity. We'll be seeing him one day like they had Metallica at Mariano Rivera's last game. They're going to have Timmy Trumpet once again playing a trumpet.
That's going to be so funny.
Oh my God. But and now we go into our actual predictions. So the 10 free agents that we're going to be doing for this prediction is based off Fangraph's top 50 free agents. I don't think that anybody wants to listen to us talk for 50 free agents of predictions. I don't think that we want to talk for 50 free agents or have that many takes lined up. But this was the Fangraph's top 50 free agents article by Ben Clemens. So yeah, I figure we can just get right into it. And we're going to start off by the number one free agent, which is, of course, big Aaron Judge, 6'7" Aaron Judge. I don't know why I just labeled his height. I feel like I said big Aaron Judge, so I had to clarify it. But I mean, there's not much that can be said about Aaron Judge right now. Coming off of one of the best walk years, maybe the best walk year in professional sports, just in general. I think you'd have to do a lot of research on that. But I think as far as contract years goes, you literally could not get any better than what he put up. 11-11 OPS, you know, an OPS plus of 211, obviously the 62 home runs, 131 RBIs. And almost, you know, I know that Ohtani maybe still deserves it, but almost assuredly going to win an MVP. So I don't know. I think that the market for him is obviously going to be big, but the big question with Aaron Judge becomes, what is he looking for years-wise? Because he already is, you know, he already is 30 years old, so he's probably going to be looking into the contract that takes him to his retirement, and I think it might be a matter of what team is going to give him, like, a ninth year. I think teams are going to be comfortable giving him 6 or 7. It might go down to what team is going to be willing to give him that 8th or 9th year.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think that you're the really only question mark with Judge is that age. And I don't want to say injury history, but he has been injured, you know, pretty significantly the past few years. And I mean, obviously this year he just showcased what he can do if he's not hurt, you know. But what type of Judge are you going to get? Pretty clearly, if he plays, you know, most of his season, he's probably gonna hit 50 home runs. Yeah. You know, which seems ridiculous to say, but it's probably going to happen. So I think it's really going to be what team is willing to do, like you said, what team is willing to do those extra 2 years. I mean, like the Yankees contract already out the gate was the 7 years, 200 million or something like that.
I think it was, it was the low 200s, which I don't think enough people talked about how crazy it was that Brian Cashman, not even like gave it to some reporter to leak that deal. He just straight up leaked it himself and told the media what he offered. And I think that that might not be starting the negotiations off on a good foot. I think that maybe Judge is more willing to hear out other offers here. I think you heard a lot of people say that they were surprised at the boos that they got in the postseason. And it was like, I don't want to play there if they're going to boo me in the postseason. But like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of these people recognize that that's just kind of how New York operates. Yeah. So I think a lot of these players especially just recognize that that's kind of part of the deal. And some people love it. Some people don't love it. That's just kind of their prerogative. So, I mean, as far as the people that are going to be contending for this, every big market possible is going to be contending for Aaron Judge. I think it's going to come down to the Giants, the Yankees, and probably like, I don't know. I think maybe even the Red Sox might look to throw a bag at him. We already learned that the Mets were not going to get into a high-profile bidding war because Steve Cohen likes his relationship with Hal Steinbrenner too much to go into that, which, boo, that sucks. But I guess I can't have my cake and eat it, too. I can't be that spoiled yet. So I think for my final prediction, I am going to say that he's going to stick with the Yankees. I think that the front office has to have seen how woeful this team got at some points, short of Aaron Judge, in that offense especially, and are going to have to say, like, hey, we're going to have to put up or shut up. This is our future. This is our future as a contender, is Aaron Judge. So I think that in all reality, they are going to finally, you know, take a look in the mirror and say that this is the deal that we're going to give you. We're going to give you whatever the teams are going to want to give you and more. So I think that he's going to stick in New York.
Yeah. I think a Judge in this case is very interesting because he is a talent that can change your team and make it a World Series favorite. But what, and this is a huge but here, it's very interesting that he almost has not done that for the Yankees. And what I mean by that is in the playoffs, it just hasn't worked. You know, I think like he obviously got them there, you know, and he obviously pushed them to where they need to go. But I think it's very interesting to look at a player of his caliber and say, yep, he's a World Series maker. And then, wait, he hasn't been there, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's obviously very interesting to me. With all of that said, though, I do think that I do agree with you. I do think he's going to stick with the Yankees. Big reason for that is I think the other teams that can go for him, I don't really see the Giants, although the Giants totally can make a splash there. I just don't really see the Giants and what else they can kind of do to sweeten that pot and build a team that will move forward with Judge and be, you know, perennial front runner, especially with the Dodgers right there. I think that's like a huge sign there, you know. One very interesting thing about this take is that, like I said, so you're going to have a lot of teams that are kind of just there looking to sign someone like a Judge, you know. I'm looking down the list of like potential suitors for him. And one name that kind of jumps out that's actually really interesting is the Toronto Blue Jays. And the reason I say that is that they've shown that they're willing to throw some money around there. You know, they've shown that they're a fun young team. And they've also shown that they need, you know, more consistency. They need more, you know, and Aaron Judge gets you there. You know, Aaron Judge takes them away from the Yankees and adds him to the Blue Jays. And so that's, you know, again, taking down one threat and adding him to another. That pretty much clears you to win the AL East if you make that move. So it's just a very interesting one. I don't really see it. I see the Yankees giving the money. I do think that it's been a wild negotiation tactic so far by, like you said, you know, leaking the contract and everything like that. But I do think that the Yankees, you know, give up and go for Aaron Judge here.
Yeah, and I think it's the reason that you say that about like the Blue Jays thing is also goes to why the Yankees should be more aggressive, because you realize how important he is, how valuable he is, and why you don't want to let that go. So I think that does it on the first one. We agree, we are chalk there. The next one is Trey Turner, the shortstop, second baseman, maybe a little bit of outfield. That was more earlier in his career. Pretty much just a shortstop, second baseman now. Really dynamic player. Has, you know, as close, I mean, at the very least, has all of the offensive tools. He can run. He can hit for contact. He can hit for power. He's not the greatest fielder, but I think his speed can make up for a little bit more of that. He can get to stuff that not a lot of players can get to. And he had a great year this year, 809 OPS. Not as good as he was maybe last year, especially when he went to the Dodgers in the beginning, but still a very high quality player, a lot of speed. You know, I already said this, decent pop, about maybe a 20 homer a year guy when he starts getting down to it. I think that this one is interesting because he's now maybe catapulted himself into a top of a very competitive shortstop class, and he's gonna, you know, probably command a lot of money. John Hamm, I don't know if you saw this, John Hamm narrated a sizzle reel, a highlight reel of Trey Turner's to give to other teams, which is funny to me because, like, out of all the players that needs a sizzle reel narrated by John Hamm, I feel like you know what you're getting with Trey Turner already. Like, maybe a down-the-board free agent might need... like, for example, let's say last year, Eduardo Rodriguez maybe could have used a John Hamm narration, because he could say in a very smooth voice, like, his FIP has far outperformed his ERAs, which is indicative of a good performance upcoming. I just thought that was funny. I was going to ask you the question of if you had to put a sizzle reel together of all of your softball highlights and become a free agent, which celebrity are you getting to voice it?
Just based off of my personality, it's probably not the pick that you'd want to hear, but based off of my personality, I'm going to go with a Paul Rudd type thing just because of how much I love Paul Rudd.
Okay.
And I think that there would be some form of like a funniness to it, you know? And I think like I couldn't do, although John Hamm has historically shown that he is a funny guy.
And those Progressive commercials right now.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got there, but you know, I think that I would just want to have Paul Rudd narrating it. But I would need to have some type of like humor for it, you know, maybe like, because I'm generally the leadoff hitter on our team, but I'm also not the fastest nor the skinniest person on the team. So I find it, I think there'd be a comical overview there.
But my pick is Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
He's really good at narrating those car commercials that have nothing to do with the actual car. But enough about that. Like I said, so I think that there's a lot of there's obviously going to be a lot of interest here. I've heard the Mets have been actually monitoring the situation around him for a while now. I've heard that Philly really wants him. He wants to be on the East Coast, I believe, is going to be a factor. And this could be my bias aside, this could be my homerism aside, and this will affect predictions I make later on in the thing, but I think that the Mets are going to make a pretty solid play at him, and maybe this is just because I want to see him in a damn Mets uniform, but I think that the Mets could make a play for him. I think that they could, you know, sweeten the pot enough to get him to say that he can play second base pretty long term. I think that Jeff McNeil, with how well he did in the outfield, proved that he can be an everyday guy out there. And then at that point, you sign Starling Marte, he can slide over to center field, because in this situation, you're probably not getting Brandon Nimmo. So I would pick the Mets here for Trey Turner. I think that he could be a great fit, a lot of dynamism in the top of that lineup. And I think he really opens up a lot of things offensively that the Mets just don't really have right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think, unfortunately for you, I'm going to agree with you on this one. I think that the Mets would really want, I would have never, if the Mets didn't come out and say that they have been monitoring the situation and looking at it, I would have never put them in the running for a Trey.
Me neither.
Would not have thought that they were going to, but it's just one of those things that I'm hearing so much noise about it, and it makes sense. I think compositional wise, like from a lineup perspective, he really puts you in a very good position where, you know, maybe you're sacrificing the Nimmo, but then you can, you know, I don't know what they want to do. They could have, I don't think you want to have him as your leadoff hitter. I think that he's more coined for that, you know, 2-3 spot around Francisco and stuff. But I think like maybe you believe in Jeff McNeil's year and you put McNeil as your number one there. And then you kind of can go down the line. And I think Trey kind of puts this team, the Mets, over the top. The Mets need to get a big prolific bat. Luckily, this is a decent year for that. I think Trey Turner gives you the most flexibility because I think that he's the one that's going to be the most willing to slide over to second.
I agree with you there, and that was actually the point that I was going to make. Like, maybe Xander Bogaerts would be a little bit more towards that, just because he might be at a point where, as he's getting older, he might look towards that. But I do think, in general, that the out of all the shortstops there, that Trey Turner would be maybe the most willing. And this could all be Cope. It could very well be Cope here, me wanting him to be on the Mets, but... Yeah, I think I'm gonna go with it. I think that there's a lot of really good shortstops here, so the bidding may not be too high in any which direction. Because if you miss out on Trey Turner, cool. There's Carlos Correa. There's Xander Bogaerts. You know, there's Dansby Swanson down the board. So I would go Trey Turner on the Mets, which is gonna lead us to the next shortstop on the list, Carlos Correa. Carlos Correa, you know, one of the best shortstops out there. I believe the Scott Boras quote was the Dior of defense, the Hermes of, damn it, I forgot what it was. It was like the Dior of defense, the Hermes of something, the, whatever, you get the point. I was going, and I told this to you, I was going to do like a Scott Borasism for each of these players, but I thought of the idea way too late and just decided not to do it, because I just don't have that creativity. But now that I'm looking at it, I'm honestly shocked that Carlos Correa has only been a two-time All-Star, because he's been a genuinely really good player for almost his whole career. He's had some down years in 2018 and 2020, you know, COVID year, but whatever. He's had some down years, but in general, he's like a high 800s, low 900s OPS shortstop. That's going to give you elite defense, won a gold glove last year, I believe. And he had a quiet year in Minnesota, but also a quiet, very good year. 140 OPS plus, 22 home runs, dealt with a little bit of injuries. That's the one thing I would say about Carlos Correa, is that he has had some issues with injuries in the past. But overall, I think that I would maybe say that he's better than Trey. I think that if I were given a chance to rank the four, you know, shortstops in the top 10 of this list, I would probably say, Correa, Trey, maybe Dansby, and then Xander. Those can probably shift a little bit more, but I would probably say that Correa is the best shortstop on the market here. And I think that his market is going to maybe be a little bit more enticing than it was when he kind of had to take just a gimme deal with Minnesota just to give him a, you know, a chance to opt out and become a free agent again this year.
Yeah, I agree with all of it above. I do think that Correa is probably a more sound player than Trey. I just think that Trey's skill set, just with that speed, enables him to kind of push him to the upper echelon of what I would want as a New York Met. And also, like I said, I don't know that Correa is more willing to play another position. Although, did he play third, or am I misremembering that?
He only played third on the Puerto Rican team when he was in the same infield with Francisco Lindor and Javi Baez.
That's what I remember that. So they were saying that they were doing that. I'm gonna go first with on this one, and I am not sure if we're gonna be similar on this one. Bouncing off of the Trey Turner pick, I'm gonna say that the Dodgers are gonna pony up the money for Correa. I think that, you know, just missing that Turner bat and then just the Dodgers kind of doing Infinity Stone collecting, I think that they're going to go for it. There is some intricacies wondering, do they care about the 2017 Astros type situation of it? I'm not sure, but I think that
they want to win a title.
So, I think they want to win a title, and I
don't think they give a shit.
I think going after a player of Correa's caliber will get you there, you know.
I like that. I already put mine in our show notes here, and I have him going to the Phillies. I think that the Phillies are going to pick up a high-grade shortstop in this class, regardless of who it is, and I think that this is kind of the best fit here, with especially how he plays defense. I think that really shores up your infield defense there, which had some moments. I think that Alec Bohm has showed a lot of improvement on the left side of that infield, and that would really just shore up that side of the infield. I know Bryson Stott had a lot of promise in this year, but I mean, I don't think that Bryson Stott is a guy that you let stop you from signing Carlos Correa. I think that you can find Stott. This is maybe a little mean sounding to Bryson Stott, but you know, you can find places to get Bryson Stott at bats.
Yeah.
You can figure that out. And if you have the opportunity to bring in Carlos Correa and a guy like that, just make sure your lineup just absolutely has no holes in it, pretty much. And then B, in the same way that Brandon Marsh was brought in to be the captain of the outfield defense and has been pretty good at that, he can kind of become the captain of your infield defense and really shore everything up. I think that Carlos Correa takes the Phillies from a fringe wild card to a World Series great run into some team that could, you know, get there and, you know, maybe even be the team that's predicted to be there and actually belong there, and be a contender. And they showed that they were that close to it. Dave Dombrowski is not one to, you know, cheap out and give up that close to a ring. So I think that Dombrowski is going to be another big spender once again this year. And I think that the big fish on that one for Philly is going to be landing Carlos Correa.
Yeah. I totally agree with wanting to get a shortstop and shoring up that defense and getting kind of a package there. I do have my Phillies pick. We'll see in a few slots here. So
as you were saying your point, I was saying, like, please don't say Phillies, because I didn't want us to go all chalk, all agreement this whole entire time. So I'm glad that we finally got a little bit of disagreement there.
Well, that's going to throw a curve. And I have not been good with predictions, so it's probably good for you.
Maybe. which brings us to our next big fish, the first big fish in the pitching market, which is, of course, Jacob DeGrom. Now, Jacob DeGrom, we kind of know the thing with him. When he's on the mound, he's maybe the greatest pitcher in you know, history. When he's not on the mound, there's a lot of times where he's not on the mound. This year, a 3.08 ERA, but a lot of that was inflated by not even a rough September, just a human September from him. But even still, 102 strikeouts in only 64 innings is absurd. He's one of the most dominant starters that we've ever seen. Now, this is where it gets a little, iffy with his contract situation, because he is 34. I think he might be looking for a Max Scherzer type deal, low years, super high on the AAV, and he might want to break that deal, which is kind of where it gets a little tough, because not a lot of teams are going to want to have a $40 million a year guy on their roster. They'd like it if it's Jacob DeGrom to be that guy, but also a lot of teams, just in their math, the way they have their finances, they don't want that commitment. So I don't see a lot of teams really going there. I think that it's just going to be the teams that I've seen reported to have a lot of interest here, which is the Rangers, the Braves, and the Mets. So I think that this is going to be another situation where he's going to want to get like 3 years, maybe 140, top out Max Scherzer. I don't know. I think that out of all the teams that can offer him, I do think that he still wants to be a Met. This could be Cope. I'll say that he's going to stick with the Mets, but I will throw out this is spoiling my pick for later, because I kind of have these interchangeable. I have Jacob DeGrom and Carlos Rodon kind of in like a lockstep thing. If one of these teams doesn't get this guy, they'll get the other guy. So if the Mets get Jacob DeGrom, I think that the Rangers are going to get Carlos Rodon, and then vice versa. I think if the Rangers get Jacob DeGrom, the Mets are going to go get Carlos Rodon. So I'm giving away my pick early. So for this case, I will say that I think the Mets are going to get Jacob DeGrom, which spoils my pick that I think the Rangers are going to get Carlos Rodon.
Yeah, I'm still not sure where I land on the whole Rangers willingness to throw the money. I do think that the Mets are going to give DeGrom a deal, you know, like they're going to give him something, kind of what you were saying with the Supermax situation, where I think they're going to give DeGrom a deal. They're going to say, hey, this is what we want you for. Please go ahead, you know, look around and stuff like that. DeGrom's been looking for that fourth year. They've been saying is really the hinging piece in this contract negotiation, that DeGrom's been looking for the fourth year, and that the Mets aren't willing to go to a high number for a fourth year. They're more willing to do, I think they've set that precedence with the Scherzer contract. I think the Mets are willing to do the Scherzer contract with DeGrom. So I think it's really if the Braves or the Rangers or another team, the Dark Horse team, is going to give...
Minnesota Twins.
No. If they're going to give DeGrom that fourth year, and if the Mets are going to pony up. But I really do think that that DeGrom is going to go out, get a deal, and then come back to the Mets, and Steve Cohen's going to match it. And I think DeGrom's going to stay here in New York. So my pick is New York. I think he's going to be here.
All right. So
I think it's a hopeful pick. I don't want to see DeGrom
I think it's definitely a hopeful pick. But yeah, moving on. I think we're going to start going through these a little quicker because I realize we are about 45 minutes into this recording. So... we're kind of going to go a little bit quicker on these last six or so free agents. So this is the next one up is Justin Verlander. This is one that I think I may have the toughest read on because he is at this very moment a 39-year-old turning 40-year-old man. And so that's tough to know what kind of deal you're going to get at that age. But he's coming off of a fantastic season where he's going to be a Cy Young finalist and perhaps even win it, a 1.75 ERA. I'm going to be really fascinated to see what his market looks like. I do not think that he will be returning to the Astros. I think that the Astros have enough pitching depth to, you know, trade away almost all of them and then rebuild the rotation from scratch with what you have left and also still have a great rotation. So they don't need to give him money. They don't need to give him a lot of money. I literally did not have this thought until like 5 minutes ago. So you can see how much prep I put into to this specific question. But I'm just going to say that I think he'll sign like a 1 or 2 year deal and return to the Tigers.
That could be fun. The Tigers did throw some very interesting, you know, money around last year, and they have showcased that they want to, do something of that nature. I'm not sure because I think you're right. I think it really goes into a very interesting situation where you want the team that is going to get him can only get him for 2 years or so. I'm almost thinking that the Giants aren't going to sign Rodon, and then they're going to go for, maybe they'll go for Verlander, but that's probably a dumb pick. But I'm going to stick with the Giants.
I mean, it's not like I put much more thought into my pick there. So, all right. So, we have the 2012 World Series there, as far as his options. I think it would just be fun. I always like it when a franchise legend returns home to his initial team, even if he may be washed by the time he gets back there. So, yeah, moving on to the next shortstop on the list is Xander Bogaerts. This one's really interesting because he's had a long, drawn-out saga in kind of trying to negotiate with the Red Sox. The Red Sox have placed their premium on... They said that they placed their focus and their priority on re-signing him, but some of their moves do not indicate that that is actually the case. And additionally, they did try to trade away one of their best players in recent franchise history just to not pay him. So I wonder where that's going to leave him. I do think that there may have been enough that's happened within the past year or so that Xander is going to maybe be looking more to go away. And there is another team with a high-profile free agent shortstop that did not re-sign him despite re-signing all of their other high-quality talent. And I think that that might end up being the landing spot for here. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to say the Braves are going to get Xander Bogaerts.
Oh, this is going to go throw off my Phillies pick here. I had Xander going to the Braves mainly because, though, not just this whole fact with Dan. Well, it is the fact with Dansby, because Dansby did do the delete everyone from his Instagram and do that whole situation. So I do have Xander going there. Basically, I think the Red Sox, even though I know he's not really a shortstop anymore, but I do think that the Red Sox did the whole story situation to kind of, you know, mitigate the loss of a Xander. And I don't think that the Red Sox were ever really serious about trading about signing Xander, although I was very intrigued that they didn't trade him if they weren't going to sign him, and try to do what they said they were going to do with Mookie. You know, but I think it's an interesting piece, but I don't know. I just think that the Braves are going to have a hole with Dansby. They need a shortstop, and I think the Mets are going to get Trey, so I think that the Braves are going to get Xander.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily a situation with the Braves where they... I mean, I think Vaughn Grissom actually came up as a shortstop. I do not have a read on what his actual position is because he came in and immediately started playing second. But I think, like, as far as these other teams with shortstops, they do have one waiting in the wings. Like, he's still a couple years away, but the Red Sox have Marcelo Meyer. You know, some of these other teams do have people that can come in and fill that gap eventually. But I do think that, I think that Atlanta's going to go out and get a guy like him. Which brings us to Carlos Rodon. I gave away my pick there. I do think that he would go to the Rangers. I do believe in their willingness to spend. They showed it last year. And, I mean, if you're going to give those guys up the middle $500 million, why stop there? You know, why not keep going? And that's kind of my rationale there. They do need to shore up the pitching staff, and I think that that's something that gives them that, a guy like Carlos Rodon, who essentially took a one-year prove-it deal with an opt-out with the Giants and absolutely proved it that he could keep it going and stay healthy and effective for a whole year. And I think that he's going to keep doing that in Texas.
Yeah. I kind of... If the Rangers go after a large pitcher, I think that they're going to go after someone like Rodon. But I will say, I don't know that they're going to do this. Maybe I'm just putting it out in the air. Maybe the Angels will go after him. I'm wondering if the Angels already said that they're not going to trade Shohei, you know. So if you're not going to trade Shohei, you got to try to shore something up. And they tried to shore up the starting pitching with the whole thought process between Syndergaard and stuff like that. But I don't know. Maybe I think that they're going to make a high AAV, you know, short-term contract with Rodon and then try to get something going there. So
my whole thought process was that the Rangers were going to sign both him and Clayton Kershaw. Texas has always been the sleeper pick for Kershaw to go. I think he's going to finally maybe go there. You know, he already has the ring, whether you believe it's Mickey Mouse or not. I'm sure he doesn't. So he already has the ring. I think that he may want to go home. But so just to clarify, your pick is the Angels?
Yeah. And also on that, I think that the whole, you know, I think Kershaw is going to go to the Rangers. And I think that there are a lot of really interesting names in that middle of the pack, namely your Bassetts and your Walkers and stuff like that, you know, kind of the mid-range 3-4 starting pitchers that I think that the Rangers will go for to pair. So
got it. Yeah. And I mean, this is already going way too long, but I figured that Kershaw was 11th, so I could just real quick give the pick for that. But now we move on to the last shortstop of the list, Dansby Swanson. Now, this one, I pinky promise that I just found this out recently after I actually made this decision. I'm going to say he's going to go to the Cubs. It's once again a situation where Chicago has shown a bit of a willingness to spend in recent years. And once again, they do have Nico Horner, but same deal as the Stott situation. While Horner is really, really good and had a really, really good year for them last year, it's not enough where you would say, oh, well, we can't sign Dansby Swanson. We have Nico Horner. So I think that that's going to be a move there. I know Marcus Stroman has done a lot of recruiting for shortstops in the past. He tried to get Correa to go to the Cubs. So I think that this is a pick. And the reason why I said that I only found this out recently and this did not influence my decision is because I wanted to look up what National Women's Soccer League team that his soon-to-be wife Mallory Pugh plays for, and it is actually the Chicago Red Bulls. So, no, I'm sorry, the Chicago Red Stars. I got them mixed up with the New York Red Bulls of the MLS. So I do promise that did not factor into my decision, but it ended up being pretty convenient. So yes, I will say that Dansby Swanson is going to go to the Cubs.
Yep, short and sweet. My last hole is the Phillies here, so I think that they've seen him enough. They're going to be willing to throw out the money there, and they'll go for it. So,
all right, we're on to the last two here. Brandon Nimmo, the lone. I was going to say the lone outfielder, but Aaron Judge was the first one we went over. The lone center fielder, primary center fielder on this list. And that is why I'm going to say he's going to go to the Astros. I don't think there's obviously not a lot of holes in that team. They just won the World Series. But if you had to pick a hole, it would be center field. So I think they're going to go there with that. And I think that whether you want to use him as a leadoff guy and move Altuve down the line, or if you want to keep Altuve as a leadoff guy and have Nimmo in kind of that 5-6 spot and be that second leadoff guy for the bottom of the lineup, I think that he could be a really effective guy there. It's once again a situation where you got to wonder who's going to give him like the 6th or 7th year. I think New York is comfortable giving him 4 or 5 for a pretty good AAV, but I think that maybe he might be looking for a little bit more than that. So I'm going to have him going to the Astros.
Yeah, I think that obviously if the Yankees don't get Judge, I think that they're going to make the biggest bid for Nimmo and really kind of shore that up. I do think that there's going to be a really dumb play here, and the Rockies are going to sign him for the hometown discount.
I was maybe going to look up how close Colorado was to Wyoming, where he's from. I think there's probably it's out of all of the
home team.
Out of all of the U.S., like the U.S. states, it's probably the closest. Out of teams that have like an MLB team, it's probably the closest.
No, I just think Colorado has no one out there right now, and I think that, you know, they did the whole random Chris Bryant signing, and I think that they're gonna want to start to pair people with Bryant, so. Why not get Nimmo out there?
You know? And hey, I mean, he did show a lot of improvement as a center fielder this year. And center field in Colorado is one of the toughest places to play. So it could be a great test for him. But that round, this now brings us to our very last pick. Wilson Contreras, the only catcher on the list. Although I've seen a lot of people are trying to look at him as like a catcher DH left field type. There was actually a really interesting story that dropped from Jeff Passan, I believe, right after the World Series, that there was a trade in place, a Jose Urquidy for Wilson Contreras straight-up swap, which, I mean, I'm sure if you're an Astros fan finding that out, even though you won the World Series, you're saying, why the hell didn't we do that? Jose Urquidy pitched like 2 innings for us in this postseason. But I think that was shot down by Jim Crane and Dusty Baker. But I do not think that he's going to go to the Astros for the reasons just laid out. Dusty's sticking around, Jim Crane's sticking around. I don't think James Click might be sticking around, the GM of that Astros team, which is another whole story. But I don't think he's going to go to the Astros. I think I've heard some buzz around this, but I'm going to go the Giants. I think with that versatility, that allows you to still put some faith in Joey Bart, that he's going to become something as a prospect, while also saying, okay, if he doesn't pan out or if he's just a DH or something like that, we do have a catcher in the long term to kind of, you know, lock things down and still be a quality bat.
Again, short and sweet here. I think that there's one team that has a glaring need. That's a competitor and has a glaring need at catcher, and that's going to be the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals are going to want to pony up some money, get him, and shore up that the hole that Yachty will have left. I don't know.
That would be hilarious if the Cardinals, after having their iconic franchise catcher retire, the first place they look to poach a catcher off of is straight from their biggest rival.
I think they might, you know. I think that they're going to do it, and then Cardinals fans are going to, you know, love it, and he's going to hit 97 home runs just for
absolutely
Cardinals dumb magic.
Absolutely. Well, so we didn't actually – the only picks we actually ended up agreeing with in the long run was Jacob deGrom to the Mets, Xander Bogaerts to the Braves, Trey Turner to the Mets, and Aaron Judge to the Yankees. So we actually had a decent amount of – variants here. Once again, I cannot wait for this to be completely wrong. I cannot wait for us to release this episode and all of a sudden Dansby Swanson went to the Key Womb Heroes of the KBO.
That would be lovely.
Wait, please tell me that the Key Womb Heroes are actually in the KBO. I actually have to double check this. Okay, we made it there in the KBO. I think that... Oh, yeah, no, I think that this is the team that actually just... Oh, no, that's not the team. This is all over the place. They were the team that made it to the finals, but lost to the SSG Landers, which had a couple former Mets, Wilmer Font and Juan Lagares on it, as well as Shin-Soo Choo. Really cool that Shin-Soo Choo got to go back home to South Korea and then win a championship in the KBO. That's an awesome story. Which, speaking of international baseball, this is something that I kind of want to get the temperature of our two listeners. So we recently just got the off-season package for MLB TV that allows you to watch Lidom, which for the uninitiated is the Dominican Winter Leagues. So if you have any at all opinions on that, let us know on Twitter. I believe we did just open up a Twitter, at Ball5Pod, as well as our individual Twitters. Mine is at DJ underscore Lopes9.
Oh, shit. Lopesy?
I pointed to you because I was going to say it, but I wasn't sure what yours were. What
I'm yours looking was. It up right now. Lopesy16.
Okay.
Lopesy16.
So let us know. We'll probably do some Lidom coverage just to look at it because I think it is really fun. I think that I've always said that, you know, the way that some of these international leagues play, you see the KBO, you see the Lidom, and you say that that should be how baseball is received in America, with that level of love and that level of passion and just willingness to have fun, but also recognizing the respect you have for your opponent. I think that that would actually be really fun for us to give a shot and do some coverage of.
Yeah, no, like I said, the first at-bat that I watched, the pitcher struck out Duel Lugo and then started screaming at the umpire, and the umpire started screaming back at him. And then they just cut to commercial.
It's great. It's awesome. So yeah, I do think that we'll actually do that. So I think that does it for our off-season prediction.
I have one more thing, DJ. You left off the biggest free agent, Michael Conforto.
Oh yeah, I forgot. I was gonna actually toss out Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah, probably.
that was the one I was gonna. That was the one I was looking at the whole entire time. I know they now have Oscar Gonzalez and Stephen Kwan, who have turned out to be pretty solid, but I still think they need a little bit of help in that outfield. So I'll go the Guardians. I was gonna give out my hot take, which maybe isn't a hot take. My postseason off-season hot take is that I do not think that Cody Bellinger is going to start next year as a member of the Los Angeles Dodgers. I don't know where he's going to go, if he's going to get non-tendered or if he's going to get traded. I do not think he will. I think he played his last game as a Dodger.
They have to make a decision on him. So,
all right. Well, I think that does it for episode 4 of the Ball 5 podcast. Once again, we hope you enjoyed listening. We hope you, had fun listening to our predictions. We hope they're right for the most part. I doubt they will be, but, let us know what two bands would you like to see tour together that are completely diametrically opposed, like stylistically opposed. I will say for my pick, let's go with I didn't actually think this through. Let's go Carly Rae Jepsen and JPEG Mafia. JPEG Mafia actually does a cover of Call Me Maybe at his shows, so this actually works. So yeah. Let's go JPEG Mafia and Carly Rae Jepsen.
I think for me, it's going to be the two groups that I had, or two, I guess one group and one person, that I had always said that sound a lot alike, but are very different genres. We already talked a little bit about them earlier. I'm going to go with the Deftones and Lorde.
Ooh.
I think that would play.
That's a good one. Maybe pre-Solar Power. Lorde, but
yeah,
good play.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that does it. Once again, hope you guys enjoyed, and we will catch you next time.
All right. Peace out, everyone.